It is a great honor and pleasure for us to have a very exalted personality among us today. This evening we have with us His Holiness Prabhavishnu Swami Maharaj. Prabhavishnu Swami Maharaj met Srila Prabhupada in the early 70s in London, and his earliest services was distributing Srila Prabhupada's book all over Europe as part of the traveling Sankirtan party. After that, he was one of the first devotees to come to India as part of the library party, where they placed Srila Prabhupada's books in the prominent libraries all over India. Later, Srila Prabhupada instructed Maharaj to preach specifically in Bangladesh and Nepal. And due to his untiring efforts, today we have more than 25 ISKCON centers all over Bangladesh. Also, Maharaj is preaching all over the Southeast Asian countries, and his preaching spans countries such as Nepal, Bangladesh, Myanmar, Malaysia, Indonesia, also as far away as New Zealand, Australia, and the former republics of the USSR. So it is a great fortune and pleasure for us to have His Holiness Prabhavishnu Swami Maharaj in our midst this evening. Let us take this opportunity to welcome His Holiness Prabhavishnu Swami Maharaj to Sri Sri Radha Gopinath Temple in our traditional style by loudly chanting Hari Bol.
Hari Bol.
Hare Krishna.
Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Balaba Giri Bharadari. Gopi Jana Balaba Giri Bharadari. Yasoda Nandana Praja Jana Ranjana. Yasoda Nandana Praja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Banachariyam. Yamuna Tira Banachariyam. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Ballabha Giri Bharat Hari. Gopi Janaballabha Giri Bharat Hari. Yasoda Nandana Praja Jana Ranjana. Yasoda Nandana Praja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Yamuna Tira Banachari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Jai Prabhupada, 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 Prabhupada. Jaya Jaya Prabhupada, 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 Prabhupada.
Nana Timurandasya Gyananjana Salakaya Chaksur Unmilitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. I'd like to read Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 2, verse number 61. Please repeat after me.
Tani Sarvani Sangyamya. Yukta asita mat paraha, vasehi asyandriyani, tasya pragya pratishtita.
And I said, one who restrains his senses, keeping them under full control, and fixes his consciousness upon me, is known as a man of steady intelligence. Purport, that the highest conception of yoga perfection is Krishna consciousness is clearly explained in this verse, and unless one is Krishna conscious, it is not at all possible to control these senses. As cited above, the great sage Durvasa Muni picked a quarrel with Maharaj Ambarish, and Durvasa Muni unnecessarily became angry out of pride and therefore could not check his senses. On the other hand, the king, although not as powerful a yogi as the sage, but a devotee of the Lord, silently tolerated all the sage's injustices and thereby emerged victorious. The king was able to control his senses because of the following qualifications, as mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 4, verses 18 to 20. Savaimana Krishna Padara Vindayor Vachansi Vaikunta Gunanu Varnane Karo Harer Mandira Marjanadisu Shutim Chakarat Chutasat Kotodaye Mukundalingalaya Darshane Drisho Tad Britya Gatra Sparsengi Sangamam Granam chatat pada saroja saurabe Srimat tulasya rasanam tadarpite Pado hare shetra padanu sharpane Shiro rishikesha padabhi vandane Kamam chadasye natukama kamyaya Yadutama shloka janasraya rati. King Ambarish fixed his mind on the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, engaged his words in describing the abode of the Lord, his hands in cleansing the temple of the Lord, his ears in hearing the pastimes of the Lord, his eyes in seeing the form of the Lord, his body in touching the body of the devotee, his nostrils in smelling the flavor of the flowers offered to the lotus feet of the Lord, his tongue in tasting the tulsi leaves offered to him, his legs in traveling to the holy place where his temple is situated, his head in offering obeisances unto the Lord, and his desires in fulfilling the desires of the Lord, and all these qualifications made him fit to become a Matpara devotee of the Lord. The word Matpara is most significant in this connection. How one can become Matpara is described in the life of Maharaj Ambarish. Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan, a great scholar and acharya in the line of the Matpara, remarks, Mad Bhakti Prabhavena Sarvendriya Vijay Purvika Svatma Drishti Sulabeti Bhava. The senses can be completely controlled only by the strength of devotional service to Krishna. Also, the example of fire is sometimes given. As a blazing fire burns everything within a room, Lord Vishnu, situated in the heart of the yogi, burns up all kinds of impurities. The Yoga Sutra also prescribes meditation on Vishnu and not meditation on the void. The so-called yogis who meditate on something which is not on the Vishnu platform simply waste their time in a vain search after some phantasmagoria. We have to be Krishna conscious, devoted to the personality of Godhead. This is the aim of the real yoga. Here, Srila Prabhupada is citing the example of Ambarish Maharaj, who was a great example of a pure devotee of the Lord, in spite of the fact that he was a king and was engaged in many kinds of worldly activities. We know that, for example, for some time at least, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu refused to meet King Prataparudra, even though King Prataparudra was a great devotee. Nevertheless, Mahaprabhu, playing the role of a very strict sannyasi, repeatedly refused to meet the king because he said that the king is a worldly person engaged in matters of pounds, shillings and pence, engaged in worldly affairs, dealing with money, power, politics, etc. But nevertheless, of course, Mahaprabhu was very affectionate to the king and ultimately did meet him. He was especially pleased that King Prataparudra, although holding such powerful and high position, came out to sweep the road in front of Lord Jagannath, bowed down before the Lord, thereby showing his humility. And he was also very pleased that the king allowed Ramananda Roy to retire from his position as governor of South India, allowed him to come to Puri, gave him a suitable pension. In this way, Ramananda Roy could stay close to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and discuss Krishna Katha with the Lord. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was very pleased by the king's attitude, also that he made wonderful arrangements to accommodate all the devotees of Lord Chaitanya whenever they came to Jagannath Puri during the Rath Yatra festival. There's description how the king was observing the arrival of the devotees from Bengal to Puri from the roof of his palace, and how Gopinath Acharya was pointing out each of the devotees, describing, telling their name, describing their good qualities. The king was very pleased to hear of all the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and ordered that, you know, very proper accommodation and all arrangements for their stay be made. So Mahaprabhu was very pleased by his nice service attitude. And finally, during Rath Yatra festival, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya advised King Prataparudra that if he would dress in ordinary clothes, giving up his kingly garb, just dressing as a common man, then during the festival he could get the opportunity to approach Lord Chaitanya. And sure enough, the Rath Yatra cart stopped at a certain juncture along the way. Devotees came out, would, by tradition, they would come out and offer many kinds of foodstuffs to the Lord. After that, the prasadam would be distributed to the devotees in the gardens and parks by the side of the route. So Mahaprabhu also respected prasadam, and then he was taking little rest. That time, Sarvabhauma told him to massage the Lord's lotus feet. So he came forward, he began massaging the Lord's lotus feet and began to recite a beautiful verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Mahaprabhu heard that and he was very much pleased, and he said, go on speaking. And he thanked Prataparudra for reciting this beautiful verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam. And in this way, he gave his mercy to King Prataparudra. But still, externally, he had been, you know, previously very strict in dealing with the king. So, you know, kings have that reputation of being, you know, very worldly. Also, maybe they may be very anxious for power, like to fight with others. They have armies, it's common for one king to invade the kingdom of another. Throughout history, there are so many examples. So, therefore, Ambarish Maharaj, it might have been thought that, you know, he was too worldly a person. Certainly, Durvasa Muni, being a great yogi, thought himself to be in a superior position to Ambarish Maharaj. Durvasa Muni was famous for testing others. I believe his color was green. And even he went to test Lord Krishna once in Dvarka. I don't know all the detail. I heard Bhaktivigyan Maharaj reciting that story once. He ordered, I think, Krishna, even Rukmini, to pull his chariot. No? And he was, you know, whipping. So this is very strange, we could say, behavior. But Lord Krishna was tolerating Rukmini, Krishna. They were tolerating everything because of his, you know, being a Brahmin. They were showing their respects to a great Brahmin, a great yogi. So he had that nature of, you know, testing others to see if they respected the brahmanas. So he would go, you know, unannounced to different locations along with many followers just to test, to see if the hosts were hospitable, as he did with the Pandavas when they were in exile in the forest. He went there to test them with many followers, and Draupadi had a pot which was famous that it could prepare as much foodstuff for as many guests as were there at mealtime. But after the mealtime, you know, there was some period of time the pot wouldn't produce until the next mealtime. So Durvasa Muni also knew this, and he came after they had finished, just after they had finished their meal. And Pandavas, you know, certainly were very concerned, but they requested him, please take your bath in the river along with your followers. And when you come back, we'll make all arrangements for you. So he went to take a bath. And then Draupadi was praying to Krishna, please help me. And Krishna appeared and he said, well, just see if you can find a small morsel of foodstuff, vegetable, anything left in the pot. And she finds a small morsel, and Krishna said, give to me. And when he took it, then immediately Durvasa Muni and his followers felt as if they'd eaten a huge meal. Their bellies were swollen up. And they were too embarrassed to go back in case there would be a big feast prepared for them. They couldn't eat it, so they just left. There's also a story in the Mahabharata of one youthful sage who lived in a forest. Durvasa Muni often would visit his ashram unannounced with many followers, and that young sage had to somehow or other, you know, feed them all. He would find roots and fruits and berries, and somehow, you know, he would feed them. And this happened several times. Durvasa Muni were very pleased with him, and he eventually gave him the benediction that you can go to the heavenly planets. And a chariot came to take him there, and a charioteer asked him, please sit down, we'll go immediately to the heavenly planet. And the sage asked him, well, please tell me, what are the advantages and disadvantages of life in a heavenly planet? So he said, well, there's so many heavenly delights there. Our lifespan is very long, and you know, hardly any disease or effects of old age. And so then he asked, what are the disadvantages? He said, the thing is, eventually one's good karma will run out, when they'll have to fall down again to the earthly planet. And as that moment gets nearer and nearer, a person feels more and more anxiety in his heart, and finally has to leave. This is a horrible experience. So they say, I don't think I want to go there. I prefer to go on practicing austerities and practicing Krishna consciousness. If Lord wants to take me to his abode, then I'll go there instead. Anyhow, this was Durvasa Muni's reputation. So again, he went to a palace of Ambarish Maharaj at an inconvenient time. It was a Dwadashi morning. The king was supposed to break his fast. Suddenly Durvasa Muni appeared with his followers. So of course, the king shouldn't eat before the exalted Brahmin guests. So he asked him, please go take your bath in the river, and we'll make the arrangements. And then he consulted the Brahmanas, what should I do? I'm supposed to break fast. So they told him, you take a little bit of water. So that'll be, you know, considered simultaneously like breaking the fast and not breaking the fast. So the king followed their instruction, but by mystic power Durvasa Muni understood. He has, you know, taken something before me. This is a great insult. And he plucked a hair from his head. He created some monster. And he sent that monster to punish Ambarish Maharaj. When Lord Narayan saw that from Vaikuntha, he immediately sent his Sudarshan Chakra. And the chakra killed that monster, and he began to chase Durvasa Muni. So Durvasa Muni had to flee. As we know, he fled all over the universe. He tried to take shelter of Lord Shiva, who said, I can't help you. You are, you know, you have offended the devotee of Lord Narayan, Lord Vishnu. You'll have to ask him for protection. He tried also to get protection from Lord Brahma, got the same answer. Finally went to Lord Narayan. And Lord Narayan also said, I cannot help you. You have offended my devotee. My devotee is in my heart, and I am in the heart of my devotee. He said, I do not know anyone else but my devotee. My devotee does not know anyone else but me. The only remedy is to go and beg forgiveness from my devotee, from Ambarish Maharaja. Durvasa Muni took the instruction seriously. He went there, he fell at the feet of Ambarish Maharaj, he apologized. Ambarish Maharaj himself was a very humble person, and he responded, please excuse me for inconveniencing you. So in this way, there was a very nice mutual exchange between them. And Durvasa Muni was, of course, forgiven. And he composed some very nice prayers in glorification of Ambarish Maharaj. Because Ambarish Maharaj had all wonderful qualities, and these qualities are enumerated in these verses, teaching us how he was really a person of steady intelligence. His intelligence was completely fixed on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. His mind and his senses were fully engaged in the service of the Lord. As we know, there are 9 different aspects of bhakti, and there are examples of great devotees who have attained perfection by one or other aspect of bhakti, such as Pariksit Maharaj, simply by hearing, attained perfection. Prahlad Maharaj, simply by remembering the Lord, attained perfection. But Ambarish Maharaj is given as an example of one who followed all the processes of bhakti simultaneously, and in that way attained perfection. So these verses are very important. He fixed his mind in the lotus feet of Lord Krishna. The mind, of course, is also considered as one of the senses, but like central sense. And various desires arise in the mind, and as a result of that, a person engages in his senses in various kinds of activities. So it's very important to purify one's mind and to train one's mind to think of Krishna, think of devotional service to Krishna and Krishna's devotees. Sometimes we might think this is very difficult, especially in the modern world. Hare Krishna. It's a very contaminated age. How can we control and purify the mind and the desires? But if we take the example of children, we can understand. The children like to play. If their parents leave them, young children, 5, 6, 7 years old, they just go on playing all day. That's their desire. But the parents know that if we just leave the children to play, they won't get an education. Later on, they won't be able to function in society. They'll suffer. So therefore, the parents send them to school. They may not like to go to school. I remember first being sent to school. It was quite scary. A young child in a strange place, huge building, so many people he doesn't know. Prabhupada said his mother used to hire a man who would tie a rope around his waist and pull him to school. So it's not the desire of young children to go to school. But still the parents will be forcing them. You have to go to school, and in school the teacher will be, drumming different information into their heads and giving them homework. They have to go home. The parents are insisting, do your homework, After that you can play. So like that, gradually the nature of their desires changes, at least in most cases. And they start to desire to, do their homework and pass their exams and, progress in their studies and go to university and get a degree and get a good job and be able to function in society. So this is an example of how, the nature of a person's desires are gradually changed. The nature of desires gradually changed, and he becomes able to, desire in the way that is recommended by the authorities. So in the same way, in the Krishna consciousness, by constant practice, an appropriate practice, the mind can be trained. Arjuna, Krishna explained to him the process of dhyana yoga, of going to the forest and meditating on the Lord in the heart, restraining the senses, sitting in a solitary place and turning the consciousness inward, meditating on the Lord in the heart. Arjuna says, too difficult for me. It seems to me the mind is more difficult to control than the raging wind. And Krishna says, yes, but he said, it is possible to control the mind by the constant and appropriate practice. You see. So, the great Acharyas, the Lord and the great Acharyas are teaching us the process for controlling the mind and consequently controlling the senses. So the means is by engaging them in the devotional service of the Lord. So that's why we see Ambarish Maharaj, his mind was fixed on the lotus feet of the Lord. He used his words to describe the abode of the Lord and the glories of the Lord, his hands in cleansing the temple of the Lord, his ears in hearing the pastimes of the Lord, his eyes in seeing the beautiful deity form of the Lord, his body in embracing the devotees, nostrils to smell the flowers offered to the Lord, his tongue in tasting the tulsi leaves, the prasad offered to the Lord, his legs in traveling to holy places, to temples of the Lord, his head in bowing down before the Lord, and his desires in fulfilling the desires of the Lord. Now we have to understand the desires of the Lord, the plan of the Lord, that is to give Krishna consciousness to everyone. Lord Krishna himself said that one who is preaching his glories is most dear to him. For him, devotional service is guaranteed. In the end, he will come back to me, Krishna says. Lord Chaitanya is a very wonderful form of the Lord. Lord, in the role of a devotee, who comes to show us how to practice Krishna consciousness in this age of Kali. He inaugurated the Sankirtan movement and he invited everyone to join the Sankirtan movement, ordered everyone to join and to distribute Krishna consciousness. Whoever you meet, he said, tell them about Krishna. Always chant Hare Krishna and teach others about Krishna. So these are the desires of the Lord. So if we also engage in that activity and try to spread Krishna consciousness, try to regularly engage in Harinam Sankirtan, chanting the holy name, congregational chanting, and distributing the books about Krishna, knowledge of Krishna, then that is how to fulfill the desires of the Lord and to become as Krishna conscious as possible. So in this way, the mind and all the senses can be engaged. And Ambarish Maharaj is the perfect example. So this is the ideal example for us to follow. It is not recommended for us to try to imitate Prakrit Maharaj and listen day and night to Srimad Bhagavatam, or to try to imitate Haridas Thakur and chant Hare Krishna mantra day and night. We shouldn't try to imitate such devotees. It's dangerous. Very rare souls only can follow such examples. For us, the example of Ambarish Maharaj is much more practical. We require variety of activity, but that activity should be connected with Krishna always or as much as possible. And one should engage in regular hearing and chanting, just as Srila Prabhupada has given a very nice program in ISKCON temples. And part of the time there's kirtan, part of the time there's japa, part of the time there's worship of the deity, part of the time we're hearing from the scriptures, part of the time engaging in different kinds of devotional service according to the nature of the different devotees. So in this way it created a variegatedness in devotional service. This is very suitable for the modern man. Not too extreme, not too austere. Balanced program of Krishna conscious activity. So if we just follow the program that Srila Prabhupada has given us, we can gradually progress in Krishna consciousness, and we can be following the example of Ambarish Maharaj, and thus we can keep the senses controlled and the consciousness fixed in Krishna, and thus we can become persons of steady intelligence and able to, you know, resist the pushings of the senses for sense gratification, because otherwise, as Krishna goes on to explain, while contemplating the objects of the senses, a person develops attachment for them, and from such attachment lust develops, and from lust anger arises, from anger complete delusion arises, and from delusion bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost, and when intelligence is lost, one falls down again into the material pool. But a person free from all attachment and aversion and able to control his senses through regulative principles of freedom can obtain the complete mercy of the Lord. For one thus satisfied in Krishna consciousness, the threefold miseries of material existence exist no longer. In such satisfied consciousness, one's intelligence is soon well established. So thank you. Hare Krishna. Are there any questions or any comments? If not, then we'll finish here. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki, Srila Prabhupad ki, Sri Sri Radha Gopinath ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Nitai Gaur Premanandi.